Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Today, I want you to step back and consider something, well, pretty fundamental. What if the very foundations of our global economy, you know, the rules we often just take for granted, what if they weren't primarily designed for abstract profit or just endless growth? What if instead they were intentionally built to prioritize life itself? You know, to foster genuine well-being, sustain our planet, uplift its people. We're constantly told this current system is the only way, almost like it's unchangeable. But what if there's a powerful, deeply argued alternative out there, one that could really redefine our collective future? That's precisely the profound question at the heart of our deep dive today. We're journeying into the work of Professor John McMurtry, specifically his 10 Principles in Action for the Life Economy. These come from his seminal 2002 book, Value Wars, The Global Market versus the Life Economy. Our mission today, to give you a clear, concise shortcut to understanding McMurtry's compelling critique of globalization and his expansive vision for what he calls a life economy. Prepare to have your understanding of economic systems maybe challenged, definitely expanded.
And what's particularly insightful about McMurtry's approach, I think, what makes him stand out, is that he doesn't just critique. He actually presents a fully articulated alternative vision. And this vision, it's rooted in a concept he defines as life knowledge. For those maybe unfamiliar, John McMurtry is a distinguished professor of philosophy at the University of Guelph and a fellow of the Royal Society of Canada, so serious credentials. Professor Peter McLaren of UCLA, he describes McMurtry's work as a tour de force and calls McMurtry himself one of the most important moral philosophers of his generation.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, we're not just talking about an academic theorist here. We're exploring the work of a philosopher whose ideas carry significant weight and have, you know, potentially far-reaching implications for how we structure everything. Society, economy, the lot.
Okay, let's unpack the historical context McMurtry lays out first, because it's really fascinating how quickly these big ideas, these paradigms can shift. He points to the fall of the Soviet Union back in 1991. Almost immediately after everyone was shouting, communism is dead, he observed what he called a strange ideological inversion.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of Marx's old idea, the inevitable victory of the proletariat, suddenly there was this new inevitability. The inevitable process of globalization.
Right. A new determinism almost.
Exactly. And this wasn't just academic talk. This narrative, globalization as unstoppable, inherently good, it was rapidly adopted by corporations, politicians, the media, everywhere.
Right.
It really kind of highlights how a dominant narrative can just emerge almost overnight and fundamentally reshape how we see the world, what we think is possible.
Indeed. And McMurtry's core critique follows directly from that. He argues this new world order, this globalization as it actually unfolded, well, it cannot succeed because it is based on essentially inhuman values.
Inhuman values. That's strong.
It is. He argues its underlying logic, you know, primarily maximizing private financial capital, is fundamentally misaligned with human needs, ecological health, just basic well-being.
Yeah.
And he connects this misalignment directly to a whole spectrum of global issues we've seen. Devastating issues.
But what specifically?
Well, things like the Iraq and Balkan wars. He links those to resource control, market expansion. The Asian and Russian financial meltdowns exposing the fragility of, you know, unregulated global money flows.
Right.
And of course, accelerating ecological collapse, treating nature like an infinite resource to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the rampant privatization, deregulation of public services.
Sacrificing the collective for private profit.
Exactly. For McMurtry, these aren't just isolated problems, they're symptoms.
Yeah.
Symptoms of a deep systemic flaw. He doesn't see it as just an economic battle on spreadsheets. He calls it an emerging global ethical war.
Wow.
Yeah, where fundamental values, human dignity, ecological integrity, social justice are clashing violently sometimes with this dominant profit-driven global market logic.
That's a powerful, sweeping indictment, a really big claim. But what I find so compelling, and you mentioned this earlier, is that he doesn't just diagnose the illness, so to speak. He introduces this foundational concept, his original life ground ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And he argues this framework can actually explain the unseen bonds uniting people across cultural and class divisions.
Which is fascinating because the world often feels so fragmented, right?
Totally. deep divides everywhere.
McMurtry suggests there's this this universal ethical basis underneath it all, transcending those barriers. He sees it in the shared struggles, the shared hopes of really diverse groups. Think rural, landless movements in the global south.
Right.
And then urban workers, students, civil groups marching for social justice in the north.
Okay.
He believes they're all sort of implicitly guided by a common, deeper understanding of what a good life actually is, a flourishing life.
So the life ground. Yeah, this life ground ethics, it's basically the shared recognition of what genuinely sustains and enhances life for everyone. And that innate desire we have to protect it, foster it, it's like a true common ground rooted in the universal experience of, well, being alive and needing to preserve that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this life ground ethics isn't just some abstract philosophical thing for him. It's the absolute bedrock, the foundation he builds his entire alternative on. It acts as the ethical compass guiding all his solutions, which he then meticulously lays out in this powerful new economic manifesto. He's basically saying, look, if we agree on this fundamental value of life, then our economic system must reflect that.
Okay, so that brings us directly to the solution side of things. He moves from critique to this detailed, actionable plan. Let's dive into some of the core tenets of his 10 principles in action for the life economy. The very first principle, it immediately challenges our assumptions about public money, about finance.
Yeah.
He advocates for public authorities' allocation of investment funds, loan credits, interest rates, and taxation levels to select for life formation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just imagine a system where the government's entire financial toolkit, every decision about public investment, loans, interest rates, taxes, is explicitly, mandatorily geared towards improving quality of life, ecological health.
Rather than just maximizing GDP growth or private shareholder value.
Exactly.
The key insight there, I think, is this radical shift from a profit-first mentality to a life-first imperative, and embedding that right into the DNA of public finance.
Yeah.
Think about how, say, big infrastructure projects get chosen now, or which industries get government subsidies.
Right. Often it's about immediate ROI or lobbying.
Or political expediency, McMurtry's proposing a system where we mandate investment in things like universal healthcare, sustainable agriculture, renewables, affordable housing, ecological restoration, not primarily because they turn a quick profit in the old sense, but because they directly form and sustain life.
So directing capital with intention towards what actually keeps us going.
Exactly. Redefining what success looks like for a national budget. Making human and ecological well-being the actual bottom line.
That's a fundamentally different way of thinking about government spending, economic direction.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different. Okay, so if public resources are steered towards life, the next question is, what about the costs generated by private companies?
Mm-hmm.
His second principle is incredibly transformative on this. Internalization, rather than externalization of costs of corporate commodity cycles by conditions of market sale, ban of all commodities of mass destruction, and application of precautionary principle for all market commodities. Okay, that's a mouthful. Let's unpack it.
Yeah, it's huge. So externalization of costs, that's a core concept in traditional economics, right? Where companies often don't pay the full cost of what they do.
Like pollution.
Exactly. Yeah. Pollution, waste, displacing communities, unsafe working conditions, that stuff often gets offloaded onto society, onto the environment. Taxpayers end up footing the bill, or local communities suffer. McMurtry's principle demands these externalities are fully internalized, meaning those costs have to be built directly into the economic equation from the get-go. The company is fully responsible.
That would fundamentally change business models.
Completely. It forces innovation towards cleaner, fairer practices. Then there's the ban of all commodities of mass destruction. Think weapons, things with catastrophic environmental impacts, and the precautionary principle. That means if there's scientific uncertainty about potential harm from a product, the burden of proof is on the company to show it's safe before it hits the market.
Not after the damage is done.
Precisely.
Right.
It flips the script from pollute first, ask questions later, to prove no harm first.
Wow. That sounds like a monumental challenge for industries that have, you know, historically relied on externalizing those costs. Big time. What kind of pushback would McMurtry expect? And how does he even imagine implementing something like this globally against such powerful interests?
Oh, he absolutely recognizes the immense challenge. He's not naive about it. McMurtry argues it would require a strong, unified public authority, likely at both national and international levels, to actually enforce these standards. And crucially, that authority needs support from a population that understands and demands these life-centered values.
Public will.
Exactly. The pushback from industries accustomed to profit maximization through externalization would be, well, fierce, obviously. But he believes the growing costs of those very externalities, ecological collapse, social unrest, public health crises, will eventually make the current system just unsustainable.
So change out of necessity.
Possibly. Paving the way for a more life-centered approach because the alternative is just too costly in real terms. Long-term planetary and human viability over short-term financial gains. That's the trade-off he highlights.
Okay, so once corporations are accountable for their full costs, the next logical step McMurtry addresses is, how do we actually measure if an economy is truly succeeding, if it's actually working for life? That brings us to his third principle, natural capital inventories and well-being index to measure and achieve the true efficiencies of economies.
Mm.
This moves us way beyond just counting money, like GDP mostly does.
Exactly. GDP is notorious for ignoring environmental damage, social inequality, because it can go up while things get worse.
Right.
So a natural capital inventory would mean literally counting and valuing the health of our planet's resources. Forests, clean air, water, biodiversity, soil health. Treating them as essential assets, not just raw materials to be consumed.
Yeah.
And the well-being index that tracks actual human flourishing.
Oh.
Things like public health outcomes, education levels, social cohesion, job satisfaction, access to nature, absence of poverty, mental distress levels.
The real stuff of life.
The real stuff. So true efficiencies, in McMurtry's view, aren't about producing the most stuff at the lowest financial cost. It's about maximizing these inventories of natural and human capital.
So an economy is only truly efficient if it enhances the life ground it depends on, not depletes it.
Precisely. It completely redefines economic progress.
This definitely raises a really important question. Who actually gets to dictate a nation's economic destiny? Is it its own people, or is it powerful global financial forces? McMurtry tackles this head on with principles 5 and 6. They're very connected, focusing on national sovereignty. Principle 5 calls for the repudiation of all debt of societies incurred without the consent of the indebted people or already paid by debt servicing and institution of an international currency clearinghouse to prevent attacks on the means of exchange of sovereign nations. Okay, let's break that down. It's pretty dense.
It is dense, but it's absolutely crucial. First part. Debt incurred without consent. That refers to what's often called illegitimate or odious debt. Basically, money borrowed by corrupt or unelected regimes, often from foreign lenders, where the money didn't actually benefit the people. Maybe it was siphoned off or used for oppression.
Right.
McMurtry argues such debt should just be canceled. The people never consented. Second part, already paid by debt servicing. This means if a nation, through endless interest payments, has effectively paid back the original loan amount multiple times over.
Which happens a lot.
The debt should be considered cleared. It protects nations from these predatory, never-ending debt traps.
And the clearinghouse.
The International Currency Clearinghouse that's envisioned as a global financial mechanism. Its job, to stabilize national currencies, protect them from speculative attacks by big financial players that can destabilize whole economies literally overnight.
Like a global referee for currency exchange.
Kind of, yeah. Ensuring fair play, preventing financial bullying against nations.
Yeah. That's a powerful push for financial liberation, stability. And Principle 6 seems to extend this idea, demanding the repeal of all transnational trade and investment rules which abolish rights of sovereign nations to foreign capital controls, negotiated performance requirements of foreign capital use of domestic resources, and retention of homeland ownership of natural resources, electromagnetic bandwidths, and public service budgets.
Wow, that's a direct challenge to a lot of current globalization rules.
It absolutely is. This is all about reclaiming national control over essential economic levers and resources.
Okay, so foreign capital controls.
That would let nations regulate the flow of money in and out, prevent destabilizing capital flight or those speculative inflows that cause bubbles.
Negotiated performance requirements.
That means foreign investors couldn't just come in and extract resources without providing agreed upon benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Things like creating local jobs, transferring technology, protecting the environment. You negotiate the terms.
Mm-hmm. And retention of homeland ownership that ensures a nation's critical assets, its natural resources, crucial bandwidths like for telecoms, public service budgets like healthcare or education, they stay under sovereign control.
So they can't just be bought up by foreign interests or privatized if it harms the public good.
Exactly. It's fundamentally about a nation's right to self-determination over its economic destiny. ensuring these critical assets serve the national interest, the people's interest, not external financial dictates.
That is a strong push for national self-determination. And McMurtry then extends this whole ethical framework to global trade itself. Principles 7 and 8 make sure trade doesn't undermine these life-centered goals. Principle 7 calls for binding environmental protection standards and schedules of accession in all international trade agreements to eliminate emissions and wastes. So, trade isn't just about moving goods cheaply anymore.
Not at all. It becomes profoundly conditional. You have to uphold strong, progressive environmental standards.
And schedules of accession, what does that mean?
It implies a clear, time-bound pathway. All trading partners have to continuously improve their environmental performance, working towards a shared goal of eventually eliminating emissions and waste throughout their supply chains.
So, a race to the top environmentally.
That's the idea. Imagine a world where you literally couldn't trade freely if your production methods were polluting another country's air or water, or creating mountains of waste nobody can deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It would embed ecological responsibility right into the fabric of international commerce, shifting the goal from just volume to sustainable, genuinely life-affirming exchange.
Okay, and Principle 8 mirrors this, but for people.
Mm.
It states, all trade and investment agreements include as conditions of cross-border entry of commodities and commodity contents into others' national markets, binding accession schedules of labor and social charter standards on the European Union model.
So environment and people.
Yes, absolutely. It's holistic. This principle mandates that any nation wanting to sell goods or invest abroad must adhere to strong, pre-agreed labor and social protection standards.
Like the EU model. Yeah, he uses that as an example. Protections for workers' rights, health and safety, collective bargaining, social security nets, that kind of thing. This would directly combat the race to the bottom, you know, where countries lower labor standards trying to attract investment, which often just leads to exploitation and undermines social safety nets everywhere.
Right.
McMurtry's basically saying trade shouldn't exploit. It should elevate. It's not about stopping trade, but making it work for people and the planet, not just corporate profit.
So embedding strong labor and social standards right into trade agreements. Making ethical conduct a prerequisite for even getting into the global market.
Precisely.
What's really fascinating here, I think, is this vision of a truly accountable global corporate system. Not just relying on individual countries to regulate, which we know has limits. Principle 9 proposes an international corporate charter binding all parties selling or investing across borders. Okay, binding them to what?
To a whole set of standards. Minimum labor and social security standards worldwide. Commodity cycle environmental protections, meaning throughout the whole supply chain. International standards for public communications, so transparency.
Okay.
Plus, crucially, a minimum level of corporate taxation to stop the race to the bottom on taxes and the use of tax havens. A maximum level of market share to prevent monopolies and too much concentrated power.
Wow. Anti-monopoly rules built in.
Yeah. And finally, accountability under international criminal law for really egregious violations that harm life.
So like a global constitution for corporations.
That's a good way to put it. It's about creating a framework where corporations, no matter where they operate, are held to universal ethical, social, environmental standards. A profound recalibration of corporate power.
Making sure profit motives are always, always subservient to life-centered values.
That's the core idea. Moving from patchy national oversight to comprehensive global accountability.
And McMurtry really brings this grand vision right down to earth with an explicit action component at the end. He outlines self-organizing life space reclamation across misused arable lands, forests and fisheries, urban concourses and coastal waterways, public education, policy, and other life ground sites in accordance with codified life standards. This shows it's not just abstract philosophy, right? It translates into tangible stuff people can do.
Absolutely. This isn't just top-down policy. It's about empowering communities, individuals, to actively participate in restoring and protecting the very systems that sustain life.
Like community gardens.
Yeah. Imagine community groups turning abandoned urban lots into local food farms.
Right.
Or reclaiming polluted coastal areas to bring back marine life. Redesigning school curricula to prioritize ecological literacy and well-being.
Hmm.
It's about bottom-up, self-organizing initiatives that directly align with those life standards defined in the bigger economic framework.
So theory into practice.
Exactly. People becoming direct stewards of their own life spaces, turning the whole theory of the life economy into tangible local transformation.
So to recap then, Professor John McMurtry's contribution, it's truly profound, isn't it?
Yay.
He doesn't just give us this powerful philosophical critique of the global market system and its inhuman values.
Mm-hmm.
He offers a detailed, principle-driven blueprint for an entirely different kind of economy, one based on what he calls life capital security and development.
Mm-hmm.
He really gives us a comprehensive roadmap for an economic system where the ultimate goal isn't just profit, but the flourishing of all life.
And understanding this is incredibly important because, as McMurtry himself pointed out, we're so often presented with this official line of no alternative.
Tina, there is no alternative.
Right. That pervasive narrative, this deep dive into his work, directly challenges that whole assumption. It shows us that comprehensive, well-articulated alternatives are not only conceivable, they've been thoroughly thought through. It provides a clear, moral, logical pathway to a potentially different future. It empowers us, really, to ask critical questions about the status quo.
So what does this all mean for you, listening in? McMurtry opens his seminal work with a really powerful quote. Knowledge always wins in the end, but not unless and until it is known.
Hmm.
If knowledge truly is power, what responsibility do we each have? To really understand the systems around us, to question those prevailing narratives, and to actively explore bold new ideas for the future, ideas that truly prioritize life itself. We invite you to keep thinking about that. Share these ideas. Consider the profound implications of a genuinely life-centered economy. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.